First up, we've got the hashtag Being Me intersectionality panel chaired by Adele Roberts. Joining her today is the lovely Lady Phil, trans comedian Lewis Hancocks, author of Straight Jacket, a massively important book, and former editor of Attitude Magazine, Matthew Todd. Also, Sarah Nimmo, lead singer of the band Nimmo, and Being Me ambassador Jodie Marsh. So please welcome Adele Roberts.
Wow, great crowd today. Hello, National Student Pride. Hi. Welcome to the intersectionality panel. Just been having a quick chat backstage with all of the panelists. I think it's going to go fantastic this afternoon. Before we bring them onto the stage, I'd like to introduce you to two lovely people who have kind of inspired this session. Kieran Stanbridge and Tracy Shaler. Hi guys, good
Hello.
To see you.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
You've been doing a lot of work since this time last year. So I first met you out there in the foyer and you were telling me about your charity, the Being Me campaign.
I think I kind of cornered you. I was like, I want to tell you about our work.
Yeah.
So basically this time last year, in October, it's October 2015, I decided that we wanted to create something that inspired everyone to be proud of who they are, because I was bullied through school because of my differences. And I'd known Tracy for about 3 years, and I was like, well, I had a week off my job, and I was like, well, I'm going to do something. So I came up with the idea Being Me, and then connected with Tracy. And at that point, it wasn't anything. It was just an idea on a website. And we came to Student Pride. We hadn't done anything, and now we're standing here on the stage. We're a registered charity. We had photo shoots at YouTube. Like, it's just kind of been a bit of a whirlwind, really.
Yeah, I've been watching your video. We're going to show a bit of it in a second. And I was like, yes, after
Thank
watching
you.
It. It's great. We need things like that.
Yeah, I think it's really important that everyone feels that they can be who they are. And with kind of individuals trying to suppress us, that actually we're made up of so many differences. And actually, we should just walk tall and say that I'm proud to be me.
Without a doubt. Celebrate our differences.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Tracy, if there's something you'd like people to take away from today's session, what would that be?
Just look around you. Everybody's different, and that's okay. It's okay. You know, if there's something that you feel holds you back, we all feel the same. We're all different, and you should be celebrating that, not allowing it to stop you moving forward. It's okay to be different. It's okay to be you.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you. All right, do you mind if we show a video of what you do?
Yes.
All right, here we go.
Hi, my name's Luke and I'm proud to be dyslexic.
Hi, my name is Bina and I am proud to be an atheist.
Hi, I'm Emmy and I'm proud to have an anxiety disorder.
My name's Harry Matthews and I'm proud to be a transgender man.
I'm Naomi and I'm proud to be gay.
I'm Jodie Marsh and I'm proud to be me because I've never changed who I am to please others.
My name is Jamie O'Herlihy and I am proud to be a transgender woman.
My name is Musharraf Asghar and I have a speaking problem.
And we are proud to be a transgender couple.
My difference doesn't stop me from doing what I want to do in life.
Why do I even have to care what people say? Because I am just doing what I like.
I don't allow my differences to hold me back.
We are proud of our differences because they make us unique and we just embrace them.
Embrace who you are, embrace your quirks, because all of them little things make you as a person.
And I'm super, super proud of my mixed heritage because it makes me more diverse.
I couldn't imagine being any different now.
It doesn't matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or where you love.
We're all unique, wonderful individuals in our own ways, no matter what that is.
Without having autism, I wouldn't be who I am today.
There are too many kids out there suffering from bullying, rejection, or simply being mistreated because of who they are.
I can tell you that life changes so much and it will get better.
What makes you different right now makes you stand out later in life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. Tracy, Kieran, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We're going to meet Jodie in a second.
Yes.
She's going to represent your charity. Okay. Thank
you. We've got a stall upstairs. So if you want to come and say hi, have some photos taken and things like that, come and say hi.
Or join
Brilliant.
In with
thank you.
All right. Should we get the panel out? Yeah? Okay, cool. Welcome to the stage, your Being Me panelists. First up, Phil Opoku, Jemaya, UK Black Pride co-founder. Also, welcome Matthew Todd, author of Straight Jacket and Attitude Editor-at-Large. Welcome to the stage, artist from LBQ band Nimmo, Sarah Nimmo! Also welcome Lewis Hancock, trans documentary maker, including My Transsexual Summer, which was brilliant. Yes, Lewis! And finally, welcome Being Me ambassador, Jodie Marsh! How beautiful are the crowd?
Wow. I know, it's amazing. Yeah. It's very exciting to be here.
Yeah.
Hiya. 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 You're right. Nice to see you. I know him.
Matthew, you're used to being here. I feel like this is
I've been here many times.
For you.
Yeah, I'm normally there.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be on the sofa for once.
Okay, like, you can chill today.
Amazing. Thank you.
So since last year, well, first of all, thank you for talking about mental health. I know you did this a whole year ago, and this year for the BBC, for Radio 1, it's going to be something that we focus on because I think that it's very important right now. You were doing this a year ago, and then since then, you wrote your fantastic book, Straight Jacket, and you discussed the topic of toxic shame. So first of all, could you just tell us why that book is so needed right now and a little bit about what toxic shame is?
Wow, okay, straight into it. Just want to say how amazing it is to see you all here, and I go around the country talking to young people, and when you see videos like that that we just saw, I just continually say, oh, I wish we had that when I was young. So thank you to everyone at Student Pride, and thank you to you and everyone who's here. So it's a great day today to celebrate all the positive things, but I think it's becoming clearer and clearer that we are understanding that the way we grow up, not being able to be ourselves, not being able to come out, you know, at a very young age, obviously that's not the same for everybody, but it does have an effect on some of us. It certainly did with me. I knew I was gay when I was 10. I had to shut it down. I spent a whole lot of time crying and thinking about taking my own life, and then thank goodness I didn't do that. And then I came out to the gay scene and expected it all to be great and everyone to be happy and loving each other. And back in 1990, that isn't exactly how it was now. And the gay scene can be amazing, and it's so great. We have a community. There's so many wonderful things to celebrate, and we can all enjoy that. But we can be unkind to each other, and that can make it worse. And I think that a lot of us absorb the shame of society's homophobia, transphobia, lesbophobia, all the rest of it, and we can internalize that. And I didn't realize I had done that. I worked at Stonewall for a year. I went to Attitude. I was politically on all the marches, very pro-gay, very proud of being gay. But I had this problem that just kept coming up that made I felt hideously unattractive. I thought I was a terrible person, unlovable, even though I was doing these amazing things with my career and interviewing superstars and stuff. That was all going well, but I just really hated myself underneath. And it was only when I went into recovery and I met some amazing therapists that I really realized what that was about. And unfortunately, we have a really big drugs problem amongst gay and bi men especially. I mean, I don't want to be hysterical about it, but it is killing people. It really is. I've known two people since Christmas who've died from overdoses. And I think we need to talk about this stuff because we haven't really talked about it. And we need to talk about it. We need to take the shame out of it. We need to support each other. You know, we live in this Facebook culture where it's all about your best picture, your best selfie. Yeah. Here's me having an amazing life. We need to be able to talk about when we don't feel good about ourselves so that we can help ourselves and help each other.
Since you brought your book out, since you've been going around the country, do you feel like things are getting better? Do you feel like things are changing? I mean, even just the amount of people that are here this year, I feel like things are changing and getting better, but can we do more?
Things are definitely getting better. I was in North Devon last night, and I kind of did have some preconceptions that it would be terribly homophobic and everyone would be awful. And there were loads of amazing, supportive people. I went to a college, and they were having their LGBT History Month events, and that was wonderful. But people there were talking about mental health. And I met a lady whose goddaughter had sadly taken her own life because she couldn't deal with her gender identity and felt bad about herself. There are still problems. And I think my generation have had this narrative, certainly when you live in somewhere like London, you mix with all these kind of cool people who don't care about gender or sexuality or whatever. that people think everything is fine now. We've got gay marriage, there's Will Young, yeah. there's Graham Norton, all these amazing things that have happened, but there is still a problem. And I think it's important just for you guys to not be going out thinking, oh God, it's gonna be terrible, everything's gonna be awful, but just to be aware that for me, you know, my drinking got out of control. Drugs weren't really a thing for me, but that's a big thing for a lot of people. Sometimes my sexual behavior was a bit crazy, and that's something I can still struggle with. And I think we need to be able to talk about all of these kind of personal things safely amongst ourselves and with friends and all the rest of it, just to know that, you know, there's a way through this stuff. We can get through it better than just keeping it all bottled up, pushing it down, and then it explodes and can become really catastrophic.
Yeah. Sarah, if I can bring you in here. So you're, for me, part of the new DIY generation. You're the future of music. Yeah. Can you relate to what Matthew's been saying?
Yeah, I think that, like, there's definitely still a kind of party cliche around gay culture in London, for sure. It doesn't really feel like, if there's places you want to go out and sort of relate to other gay people or find scenes, it does seem to definitely revolve around those kind of, or places which involve extreme behavior or extreme pleasure, which I guess is what we're all seeking deep down, because it's something that maybe we've all been kind of repressed with, or I don't know, it's been missing. But yeah, I definitely think that it's glorified a little bit amongst gay culture, and it's something that you feel like you have to take part in at times, and something that, I don't know, it kind of adds to the glamour and the glitter of the whole experience, and really, like, that just shouldn't, it shouldn't be any part of it at all.
Do you feel a pressure to act a certain way because you're in that industry with it? Kind of, I don't know, not encourages it, but there's a lot of it around.
I don't personally feel like that. Mm-hmm. I actually got a lot of my partying out when I was quite young, so before I was involved in it. But I think I've definitely seen it. It's definitely a thing. Yeah, for sure. I've been to parties before, like, you know, industry events and stuff like that, and it's rife. But to be honest, in my teens, it was rife in, like, all sorts of different kind of parts of out culture. It was rife. So I don't know. I definitely think it is a problem, but it hasn't affected me personally. I'm quite lucky in the sense that I've never had it pushed upon me in music or anything like that.
And do you ever feel that you had a straitjacket on? Because I did when I was younger. I didn't really understand what being gay was when I was younger, and I didn't realise that I was until I was much older.
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't that I thought I was asexual, but I literally just didn't care at all about boys or girls. All I cared about was music. I was a proper rebel. Like, I was really, really naughty at school, like, so badly behaved.
do tell. I'm joking.
You don't want to know. You'll all leave. But I think that, I guess when I was younger, I just didn't feel like I was part of the conversation that other girls my age were having with life about, like, their desires. There was, like, you know, I've got four sisters, all of which are straight. Actually, one of them is bisexual now, sorry. They're, like, all talking about boys all the time, and I was never involved in that. And I think I probably always, in a way, performed my otherness by kind of rebelling and just being like, oh, I'm not involved in that, I'll do something else. Yeah. But I actually came out really young. I came out when I was 14, yes. Which is young. But I think because I was exposed to kind of boys and, like, my sisters and stuff from a younger age, it kind of started a bit younger. But yeah, I don't know. It was a bit of a weird time. I guess it was hard for me to come out, and then when I did, I, like, went out with, like, the most hardcore goth in the entire school, and I was like a proper chav. So I guess I was like, yeah, what am I, bitches? Probably.
Lewis, just behind you there, you're nodding, so I feel like a lot of what Sarah said you could relate to.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because obviously I'm trans, you know, I had to come out as, well, I came out as a lesbian first, and I didn't even, coming from a small town, I didn't even know what being trans was, even though I felt like a boy from a very, very young age, all kind of my whole life. I had to go through the whole thing of, yeah, I guess living as a lesbian is this weird, because I was, like, putting on, like, an act, I suppose. But yeah, so I was in that kind of gay scene for a while, but it never matched how I felt. So it's like an interesting experience. I had to come out twice, basically. I came out as a lesbian and then came out as a straight guy, do you know what I mean? So I've done all bloody full circle. So but I was lucky enough to have a very supportive network, even though my town was very small and quite small-minded.
Are you from Warrington?
It's in Tellings, close by.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, you know, the sort of partying and things. It does, when, because we had like a gay night and stuff, like, you know what I mean? It's where you kind of find your sort of friends and community, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So it is revolving around that scene quite a lot. Yeah.
Well, just talking about being me and being vocal, and I think you're somebody who is fantastic at being vocal, and I watched this video with you explaining about non-binary and the importance of that, and I'd probably take this opportunity to apologise to anybody if I've ever offended anyone, because I didn't realise that the word female and male, those words, mean different things to different people.
Yeah.
To me, it was just like literally a sex thing or a biology thing.
Yeah.
But I'll let you take over, basically, and why non-binary is so important.
Well, I didn't know anything about it myself. You know, as I said, coming from St. Helens, it wasn't even a thing. And I took part in the TV show My Transsexual Summer, met people of different identities. We started making documentary films, and it was a big learning curve for me. I mean, I've probably offended people. I always think the main thing to remember, it's about respect, and people are going to make mistakes with, you know. And yeah, I think I personally am not one for labels, about, but that's only my personal experience. Like, I don't even really label myself trans. I'm just, you know, a human.
Yeah.
But I can see the importance of labels, because they were important to me at first when I was finding myself, and it's so different. It's always hard to speak about trans experiences, because it's literally everyone will say a different thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, and at the end of the day, it's just about respect, isn't it? You know, you can just ask someone what pronouns they prefer, like how they identify, and I suppose it doesn't take much to ask. But if you do assume, which, you know, I probably assume that people too, when somebody, like, you know, someone will just correct you. And I think it's important, I always say, like, that, because some people can get very sort of like jump down people's throat for getting it slightly wrong, but I've never had that approach. I just think it's much better to just explain and educate people, you know, even my own friends, like, you know, have misgendered me when I first transitioned, but I didn't fall out with them over it. I just, you know, let them learn as well. So anyway, that's probably a bit of a rambly answer, but the point is, it's just so, it's so varied with people.
Since your Channel 4 program, which looking back now was very forward thinking, I think it's really cool that they did that.
Yes.
Do you think things have got better? Because obviously with what's happening in America at the moment, and Donald Trump just going around changing everything willy-nilly, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's like we are going in reverse in some ways, aren't we? But then in other ways, not. I mean, I think, I'd like to think that if there was a show like My Transsexual Summer out now, it would be better than that, because even that said some things that were slightly wrong. I think it said about somebody dreaming of becoming a man or something, like, you know, and it's like, just like, you know, I think it would be, I think that things have improved in a lot of ways, but yeah, like, you know, I guess in America right now, it is just, there's, you know, like, we were saying before about Donald Trump going against the unisex toilets. It is going to have a direct effect on trans people, and, you know, I mean, even as extreme as, like, you know, the suicide rate and things like that, I can imagine that going up, because if I'd been, you know, if all these sort of laws and things like that that didn't protect us were around when I found out about beach, I would have thought it was a really scary journey, and I've had a relatively easy journey with it, and I think just, yeah, and then so you're scared to transition, but then what else can you do, because then you're not getting to be yourself.
Yeah.
So do you know what I mean? I think there's probably a lot more trans people than we know that just perhaps are afraid to transition, really.
Well, Matthew was saying, you know, you met parents of children that had taken their own lives because they were struggling with being transgender, or they, you know, they thought that they could be.
Yeah, it was a woman whose goddaughter had taken her own life. I mean, what's so amazing about all of this, and, you know, props to Lewis as well. I mean, like, amazing that we're talking about trans stuff. We weren't talking about it when I was coming out. In 1990, you know, it just was not part of the conversation. It was just lesbians and gays. That's the way it was. And we were hated. I mean, public enemy number one. I mean, we were told your life was worthless. The tabloids were after us continually. We were the worst people in society. So it's incredible, to think that these are important things. They do affect people. They are about real people's lives. And these discussions can kind of happen in academia or in the media or politically with Trump. But it's, you know, everyone here is living it. And so, you know, it's down to us to change stuff. And I'm a bit old and tired now, so it's kind of over to you guys.
Over to you. Well, Lady Phil, you've definitely done your fair share of changing things. And first of all, I'd like to say thank you to you for welcoming me to London, and you might not have even realised you did this. So I moved in 2012, and I was with my girlfriend, and we'd heard about Gay Pride, and we were like, let's go and try and find it, because we weren't quite sure where it was. And we went to Soho, and I think it was Golden Square, and I chanced upon UK Black Pride. And I'd never seen anything like that before. So thank you. Thank you very much. And I was watching a video of you yesterday at last year's Pride in Trafalgar Square, doing an amazing unifying speech and just basically saying, let's not be divided anymore, let's be together. And you've been doing this now for 11 years, so it'll be your 12th year this year.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent. So in terms of, I'm just going to talk about something that has been brought to my attention recently. So this is to do with dating apps. And I've not been on dating apps because when I got with my girlfriend, it was before that. And I'm kind of a bit like, oh, I wish I had the experience of swiping right, you know, but I missed out on that. But I do believe that it's a bit of a strange place on there. I know that there's a certain type of person that goes on a dating app, maybe somebody who's looking to find other people to have a bit of fun, but I believe there's a lot of problems with prejudice within the gay community, and people having on their profiles things like no blacks, no Chinese. I actually can't believe that. Is this something that you've experienced, of people that you've worked with talked about this?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you very much for the invite to be here, and also that I welcomed you to London. Didn't know she had a girlfriend, and I was trying to hit her up there, you know. Anyway, yeah, I know, I'm out, just in case you didn't know. Yeah. I think in terms of dating apps, it's, I believe everyone can have their preference, absolutely. But it's about when your preference then starts bordering on real discrimination. And the reason why we do UK Black Pride, it's not that it's a separate organisation from any other pride. It's about finding what is a safe space for people of colour, and I use black in its political context, for people to just celebrate who they are. Because when you look at whether it's dating apps, whether it's social media as a whole, whether it's spaces like Pride's, sometimes you can't actually be you because it doesn't take into account the different intersections of who you are. So it's great that this panel is about being you, yeah, being who you are, and also touching on intersectionality. Because for some, intersectionality, if I can just briefly explain it, because I'm not sure everyone knows what it means. The best way that I can say to sit here as a black lesbian woman who has a disability, a hidden disability, I want to be able to talk about my race without having to leave my gender at the door. I want to talk about my gender without having to leave my sexual orientation at the door. I want to talk about disabled people without having to leave my race or any other identity which makes me up. So that word was coined by a woman called Kimberly Crenshaw, and she was an activist. And it means that the different parts of who you are intersect with each other. And in order to be truly you, you can't be erased by various parts of you. So we can talk about homophobia and challenging it on social media, but we can't talk about homophobia in isolation of challenging racism, Islamophobia, sexism, misogyny, because there are many different parts, yeah, to who we are. In answer to your question, yeah, there is a lot of that that does go on social media. And having spoken to quite a few men of colour who are gay, bisexual, trans, you know, they see things like, and it goes back to the old days in the 60s, 70s, you know, no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. Yeah. You know, seeing that sort of stuff on social media is discriminatory within itself. But people can have their preference. You know, if I decide to hit you up on Grindr and say, you know, ooh, you look really good, blah, 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 all you have to say is, thanks, but, you know, I'm not interested. I don't think you have to be explicit and say, no blacks, no Asians, no Chinese. Yeah. The point of that is what?
I have no idea.
No,
I'm just saying. Can women go on Grindr just asking for a friend?
No, no. That could turn into catfish now. Careful.
Oh, okay. Mm. All right, just asking. Back to what Matthew was saying about toxic shame. Do you think this is possibly where this comes from, the problem, these deep-rooted sort of things that are bred into us when we're younger and we don't really realise, and then as we get older, that's when it comes out? Mm. Do you think it's rooted in that? Is it the older people that are doing this?
No. There's a saying that, you know, there's no child is born homophobic, sexist, racist. You know, no child has that sort of prejudice. So it's all a learnt and taught behaviour. So when you look at the issues of racism or homophobia, it is deep-rooted and you have to get to the root cause of it. So as I go back to challenging homophobia, you can go back to where teachers couldn't talk about same sex, that was section 28, you know. Then if you look at racism, it could stem right back to colonialism, you know, and you have to be able to usualize and or normalize these conversations and talk about what was in the past in order to think about how you eliminate any form of prejudice, any form of racism, any form of discrimination. And it's not going to be easy. Yeah. But if we're sat here in this room and we're having this conversation, you know, my plea to everyone in here is to, when you walk away from here, don't just think, oh great, I've had a great time. Think about how you want to challenge things to make it a better place for not just yourself but the next generation.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. I've seen you nod into a lot of the things that have been said here, and I think it's fantastic that you are out there representing, being a great ambassador for the Be and Me campaign. Why is it so important to you?
Thank you. I've done a lot of charity work over the years.
Yeah.
I've also lost faith in a lot of charities over the years. Being Me is by far my favourite charity I've ever worked with. It's incredible. Not only are they non-profit, so everybody that works with them are volunteers, they're not being paid. So when you give them money, you know it's not going to the staff.
Yeah.
It's actually going to help the cause. But obviously, having worked with lots of anti-bullying charities, which try to tackle bullying after it's happened, Being Me is just trying to stop and eradicate bullying in the first place. Because it's saying, no, just accept everybody as they are, no matter what they look like, no matter where they come from, no matter what they believe in, you know, just accept everybody because we're all different and that's what makes us human. So Being Me, I think, if the whole world were to realise what I know about them, which is how amazing they are, and get behind them, we could actually stop bullying forever. And I mean forever. Like, you know, the more people that realise, just accept people as they are. Like, yeah. I don't care what any of us look like sitting here today. I don't care that my hair's purple. Actually, I do love my purple hair. But what I mean is, it doesn't matter. Who cares? Like, I don't care what you look like or you look, you know. I care if you're a nice person.
Yeah.
And I care if we can sit and have a decent conversation, like, and you're kind. And so I think Being Me is just the most important charity I've ever had any dealings with, ever.
I think I want to pick up on something you just said there. You said people should accept themselves as well, and maybe this is where a lot of the problems come from.
Oh my God. And learning to accept yourself is probably the hardest thing in life. Like, you know, I'm blooming nearly 40 and still don't know who I am.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What's your secret?
38. Botox. I actually need some, look. My forehead's moving too much. Look, I can't claim to have been through anything like what any of you guys have. I've never come out, or, you know, I don't even know what I am, don't ask me. I gave up trying to decide what I am.
Well, this is the thing, and I think it's hard for you because you've been so on such a high profile for such a long time that people feel like they own you. And my friend brought you out the closet for you last year. She was like, oh, have you heard Jodie Marsh is bisexual now? And I'm like, oh, well, thanks for telling me. Like, you didn't say it, she said it.
Honest truth, I don't know what I am. At the minute, I'm asexual, as in I don't want sex with anybody at all. I'm just not interested in sex. That's just how I feel.
Yep.
I know that I'm attracted to women as much as I am to men. Mm-hmm. I know that I look at women as much as I do men. Does that make me bisexual? I don't know. And actually, like you, I don't like labels. I don't need to say I'm gay or I'm bisexual or I'm this.
Yes.
Again, it doesn't matter to me. I don't. You know, if I fancy a woman and I want to look at pictures of her, I will. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to kind of tell everyone. Do you know what I mean? And it's not a thing like I'm ashamed of it or anything else. I'm absolutely not. I hold my hands up and say I find women as attractive as I do men. But it's just nobody's business what I do on my own in the bedroom.
Yeah. Amen.
Without being too crude. But do you know what I mean? It's what I was going to say is I can't claim to know what it's like to have to come out or any of that stuff because I haven't come out and I suppose I half have in what I've just said. But I have experienced lots of prejudice and discrimination in lots of ways and still do now. You know, challenges I face on a daily basis. Obviously, everyone probably knows I started out in glamour modelling and a bit of reality TV. These days I make investigative documentaries. Now, I've made like 25 odd of these documentaries. They're incredible. They're hard-hitting, serious, interesting, factual, just amazing. I'm still turned down for TV jobs because they say, oh, but you've done glamour modelling. Like, as if, because I did a lads mag 7 years ago, I'm not capable of doing a good job at something now. And, you know, and this is after I've already proven myself with the documentaries. So it is constant. You know, this is irony for you. I was making a two-part documentary about bullying, and I had bright red hair at the time, and I got told by the producers, you need to change your hair back to brown because you can't make a show about bullying with bright red hair because you look silly and you won't be taken seriously. And I was like, mate, the colour of my hair doesn't affect my ability to do a job.
Yeah.
And actually, if I'm going into schools and working with kids, they'll probably like my red hair. They'll probably think my red hair is cool, which they did. So I refused to change it, and I made the show, and it was amazing.
Well, this is why we're here, isn't it? Look at the panel. Look, like you said, look at the audience. And we need to be on TV. We need to be on radio. We should be allowed to have doors open to us as well. We shouldn't have to conform and look a certain way just to get jobs.
It doesn't affect your ability to do a job or anything else in life, to be a nice person. It doesn't affect your brain power. Like, you know, again, I faced a lot of discrimination when I started glamour modelling in the first place because people knew I had a brain because they knew what my exam results were. They knew I went to a private school. They knew, you know, they had this idea like, oh, she's really clever. Why does she need to get her boobs out? Well, the honest answer, I wanted to make lots of money and really quickly. And I was like, this will be the easiest thing and the quickest thing. And it was great. But I'm not ashamed of what I've done in the past. Like, all of it has led me to where I am now. And where I am now is finally someone that accepts myself and enjoys my life and is happy in life. And I know it's cheesy to say it, but I genuinely do love myself in the best possible way. Like, not in a big-headed way, but in a way like I've learned to accept who I am. I still don't fully even know who I am, as in, you know, who knows this time next year, will I be with a man, a woman, or rolling around with a toy in the bedroom still, but, you know, on my own. The point is, I don't know where life's going to take me, but I know that I'm happy, and I know that...
That's the main thing, happiness.
I accept myself, and I love myself, and you've got to do that. Everybody's got to do that. You've got to look deep inside yourself and work out who you are, and most importantly, what makes you happy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's... I'm honoured to be here today. I really am, and I think it's an amazing thing. And actually, it's mixed emotion because I feel sad that we even have to have something like this. Like, I genuinely feel sad, like that we're still having to shout out and spread the word and go, like, you know, when are things going to change?
We'll keep going.
No, but at the same time, I feel positive that we are still doing it, and it's great, and we should carry on. Absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Lady Phil, would you like to close the show? I think we've got about 2 minutes left.
Wow, really?
I thought you were going to say something. You don't have to if you don't want.
Yeah, I am going to say something. Okay. Now, it shouldn't matter what we look like, but let's start usualising the conversation about challenging mental health, stigma, you know, challenging racism, homophobia, Islamophobia, all sorts of phobias and discrimination. Now, there's a quote that I normally end some of my speeches on, and I think it's relevant to today in terms of being me and being you and navigating your way through your particular journey, and it's by Dr. Desmond Bishop Tutu. He says, if you are neutral in the situations of injustice, it means you've chosen the side of the oppressor. So it means that let us not be complacent, let us not be silent when we see somebody struggling or going through difficulties, and let us understand that your struggle has to be my struggle and my struggle has to be your struggle. A collective voice is a powerful voice, and it's about solidarity.
Amen. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you, Lewis. Thank you, Jodie. Thank you, everyone. Right, I think we go now.